Hi, team. You're about to listen to my interview with Omri Katz. Omri is the founder and CEO of Dialog. Dialog is an e-commerce personalization platform designed from the ground up to democratize access to personalization technology for the smallest e-commerce merchants in the world, all the way to the largest merchants in the world using their low-code, no-code technology. Enjoy the interview. This is the E-Commerce Edge podcast with your host, Jason Greenwood. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another amazing episode of the podcast. I have a guest today that I think you're going to really enjoy hearing from. He's got some pretty cool technology to tell us about, and I'd love to introduce you to Omri Katz and his technology platform, Dialog. Welcome, Omri.
Thank you, Jason. Glad to be here and have this discussion with you today.
I love chatting with you today and really looking forward to this. I've been looking forward to it since we got this locked into our calendars. Now, you're based in Tel Aviv, and we were talking off air just how big and fast-growing and tight-knit the Israeli tech slash e-commerce ecosystem is. A number of Israel-based tech platforms on the podcast before, but it seems like you guys all know each other or know of each other and really support each other, which is really cool because it's germinating a heck of a lot of amazing stuff coming out of Israel, particularly focused on e-commerce.
It is. We talked about this. I don't know how it happened, but there's like a bubbling scene for e-com enablement tech companies here in Israel, which in a very funny way, all sits like their offices is really close to one another. So we were in shared spaces before we got our own office. And inside those shared spaces, I think there were like five e-com enablement companies. So we were just having lunch together and talking and sharing ideas, you know, going for a smoke downstairs from time to time. And now that we moved like a block away, still there's maybe 10, 15 companies around us all doing e-com enablement. And like from this ecosystem, which for some reason is relatively successful here in Israel and like selling to the US and selling to Canada, but doing everything from here.
Yeah, that was the other really interesting thing is that almost all of these companies that I've been in contact with, their main target market is North America, specifically the United States market, but also tangentially the rest of North America, Canada, Mexico, etc. But it's really interesting because a lot of these companies will do, I guess, what's colloquially known as the flip, where they'll maybe incorporate maybe a headquarters or at least a satellite office in the United States to service the American market specifically, just because the American e-commerce market is so mature and advancing so rapidly. And it's a pretty fertile for tech companies to find a home.
It is. We've done it as well. So funny enough, we have a lot of, most of our sales team is here in Israel. We have an Aussie guy, we have someone from South Africa, we have from the UK, and all of them are actually selling to North America, which is funny. But then we now incorporated a company in the US, and we're going to get our first employee there soon. Yeah, for us specifically, we've seen that a lot of companies are targeting North America, specifically around the Shopify ecosystem, because I think that the companies there are more mature, and there's obviously a lot of business, most likely more than any other geographic in the world. For us specifically, for Dialog, because, and I haven't started talking about what we do, but in terms of like our target market, we are selling to the US, but not necessarily. So we do have merchants and brands that we service in Europe, like mostly in the UK, but not just there. We have like French brands and also in the Netherlands. And funny enough, we had like we onboarded two brands last week from the GCC from Dubai. So because of like this Shopify ecosystem and those clients that are mostly SMB, like small, medium sized, sometimes mid market, and not enterprise, we find it pretty comfortable like reaching out to them across the ocean and having conversations and being in a way geo-agnostic.
Yeah, really incredible. When we were on our way moving to Mexico, which is where myself and my wife live now, we went through Dubai, and I had never been to Dubai before. I'd heard all the amazing stories about Dubai, about the amazing market. You know, now that I've been there, we spent a week there, and it was an incredible place. Like the vibe there is just insane in terms of business growth, business incubation, obviously a lot of immigration happening there. It's truly a melting pot. It's very forward thinking. The government is spending billions of dollars there. E-commerce is absolutely exploding there. As we were talking to a lot of the locals, it's the UAE full stop is quite an incredible target market that I think a lot of Western brands and technologies overlook that market. But I think they're sleeping on what will turn out to be just a phenomenal opportunity for e-commerce over the next.
Something very interesting about Dubai is that, at least here in Israel, like among people I know and my friends, there is this idea that most of the money, Dubai obviously is a very rich place. And when you've been there recently and you see it and you feel it, when you walk down the street and when you drive your car, those huge skyscrapers and this landscape, everything looks like amazing. And it's obviously a very rich place, but there's this idea that all this money is coming from either oil or gas and stuff like that, that they're just selling, which is not really true. And this is something I found out late, that this is how they actually started, but they used all the profits that came from oil and gas and they invested it into building a very broad ground for companies to come in and enjoy like tax benefits and enjoy a very supportive ecosystem and a lot of support from the government. And now I think that the business sector is 70% of the money generated in this country. So it's not gas and natural resources anymore, but it's actually the business there, which is thriving. And e-commerce is obviously part of it.
Indeed, when you look at their golden visa program, when you look at the ability for people to easily get residency there with relatively minimal investment, when you look at their zero tax regime for companies that are driving all the revenue from outside the UAE, when you look at the support that Abu Dhabi, which is where a lot of people think that there's oil in Dubai, it comes from the adjacent emirate, which is Abu Dhabi. That's really where the oil and the gas has come from. And so there has been absolutely that smart investment, because they realize that the oil and gas won't last forever, and they realize that opportunity won't last forever. And they have really worked very hard on that dual front, right? Not only courting businesses to operate from a headquarters and be domiciled in Dubai and be operate from one of the free zones in Dubai, but also in the other Emirates. But secondarily, obviously, they've just made multiple billions of dollars worth of investment in building out tourist attractions and making Dubai an incredible tourist destination that, you know.
Have you been to this place in Dubai now that you went with your family? Have you been to this flower garden? Have you seen
it? No, I heard about it. We ran out of time. We were gonna do the flower garden, and we were also gonna do the frame. I don't know if you've heard of the frame, but we didn't get a chance to do either of those. We were just too busy with everything else. But I've heard that this flower garden is insane.
This is spectacular. Really, there are so many attractions there, but this one, they have a real plane, and I don't know, a Boeing plane that they're not flying anymore. And it's covered by flowers, like all of it. You can't see anything but flowers. Like, this is an insane park. Everything that they do is
insane. It's pretty full on, but it's great that we went off track and got on to Dubai. Because I think even though it's not directly related to dialogue and directly related to the Israeli tech ecosystem, I think it's interesting that the more that I travel, the more that it broadens my thinking about, even with the work that I do with my clients and the tech ecosystem in general, I think that travel like this, because we went to Dubai, we went to Barcelona on our way to Mexico, and the more travel that I do and the more that I learn about local markets and how they operate in their domestic market, combined with how they go to the world and how they plan their go-to-market activities and the timelines that they think in and operate in overseas, oftentimes We particularly in the West and particularly in the States, can be pretty short-sighted. Everything is measured in quarters, and it can often be short-sighted. But one of the things that I've really learned, the more that I travel, the more that I see the world through different eyes, the more I realize that most countries, most governments, etc., have a much longer timeline to their thinking. They're thinking in decades. They're thinking in their planning for 10, 20, 30, 50 years out. They're planning in terms of things that the things that they're working on, they may never actually get to see in their lifetime. And so this long-sightedness, I think, is something that we all can learn from, even in our own business, in our own life. I think building for the future even if we will not ultimately necessarily benefit from that, I think it alters the way we approach the world, and we are a little bit more cautious and a little bit more thoughtful about our impact on the world and future generations when we think that way.
For sure. 100% agree. And you know what? Part of what we do, dialogue, and maybe I'll take a second to explain in a minute, but part of what we do with our clients is we come up and say, all right, we offer you the technology, but not just that, we want to be partners with you. So we want to come up with best practices because we are exposed to that many clients from that many geographies. And we want to come up with new ideas of how you can optimize your experience, how you can use dialogue to the best extent of it and really generate this uplift that you're looking for. And basically, we have our CSMs team that are working hand in hand with the e-commerce manager, with the brands we partner with, and give them like added value, regardless of the platform, from stuff that they are exposed to with other merchants. So we're trying to share this information with them.
Yeah, and that is the beauty of the ecosystem. And that is the beauty of a SaaS platform like Dialog. Now, you're a personalization platform. And if people want to learn more, your URL, your home base is nowdialog.com. So if anybody wants to learn more, they can go straight to nowdialog.com. They can book in a demo, et cetera. But you are a personalization platform. And for people that haven't heard of Dialog before, but maybe have heard of a platform like Nosto or some of the other Monetate, some of the other personalization platforms for e-commerce out there, I'm guessing that is the nearest type of technology to what you guys do that someone in the ecosystem may have heard of before.
Yeah. And obviously there is a big overlap there, but there are also a lot of other things that we're doing, which kind of, we try to innovate a lot of the times. Maybe I'll take a second to explain what we do and why I started Dialog in the first place. And then maybe we can give a few examples so it would be easier to understand. So basically, Dialog, as you said, we are a personalization platform. We also like to call it an experience optimization platform. Basically, Dialog, at the end of the day, helps brands optimize their site. They invest so much money in user acquisition. They invest so much money in bringing on potential clients. And then the minute those clients go into the site, then you tend to forget about them. But there's a whole journey that you need to make sure that it's fully optimized, that your brand actually resonates its message with the potential client, give them the right recommendations at any given moment, show them the right messaging, give them the right content, tailor to each user as much as possible. This is the main idea of what we're trying to do. And we prove that it's actually working, that it's moving the needles for brands that we work with. So brand starts working with us, suddenly the website becomes dynamic, it becomes smarter, becomes more personalized. Each user gets a different experience to shorten the path to a successful conversion. The reason why I started Dialog in the first place is, first of all, maybe a few words about myself. I'm coming from a tech background, then pivoted into business. I studied law and business because I was curious law. I knew that I don't want to be a lawyer, but I studied it and founded my first startup during school. A few years after, I started with a childhood friend. I started selling on Amazon, and I've opened a Shopify store doing like drop shipping for all kinds of different products. And we started facing this issue of the conversion rates and how you can optimize your store and increase KPIs, not just spending so much money on ads. And I started exploring this ecosystem. And since I'm coming from like a tech background, I started thinking with a product orientation mindset of what we can do to create this more optimized experience for users that come into the store. And there, what I found there is that there's those solutions that you've mentioned. So companies like Nosto and Monetate, and back then there was Dynamic Yield, which were, at my taste, were very expensive for a small merchant or a medium-sized merchant. Very expensive and in a way complicated. And I remember I spoke with all of them, and they said, listen, there's no way for you to operate what we give you. So you need a CSM. And I remember the prices were like insane. And I'm looking at the platform, and there's tons of opportunities. Those are amazing solutions for enterprises. There's so many features and so many capabilities, and they're very robust. But at the end of the day, I felt like it's not a perfect match. If you're a small, medium-sized merchant, you have so much on your plate, you're understaffed most of the time, and you need something like a technology that's going to work for you, not the other way around. And this is why I decided to start Dialog. And funny enough, one of the co-founders of Dynamic Yield and one of their early stage investors were interested about this idea, and they invested in Dialog. They were the first investors, and this is how I start. And basically, this is what we'd want to do. We want to go to this part of the market those SMBs, mid-market companies, and say, listen, if you're looking for something that's going to move the needle for you, you don't need to work for that. You don't need to be experts. You don't need to pour tons of money. Then Dialogue is the solution for you. We are bringing the technology that was saved up until now for the enterprises. We want to open it to the entire market. We want to give you the option to optimize your store very quickly. Don't kill yourself to do it. The platform is going to work for you. And also, if you want, we have the customer success as a service to give you more added value as the best practices and stuff like that can help you do that. But the platform itself is self-serve. It's super, super easy. For Shopify specifically, we have a native app. So everything is a drag and drop experience, very colorful. It's no code completely. So you don't need to hire like a developer or an agency. At the end of the day, super simple, super fast.
Wow, what an amazing story to get where you are. And you had firsthand experience, which allowed you to go into a very blue ocean space. Yes, there were competitors out there, but not at the demo that you were targeting and not at the niche that you were targeting. And I love the fact that your whole concept behind this was, hey, I actually want to democratize access to this type of technology and not leave it for the enterprise. Because you're right, a lot of the solutions that have been around for a long time and they're very well known and their brand is everywhere, that they are very expensive technologies. They're very expensive. And I think one of the things that gets lost in the shuffle of that consideration of price and ROI and all that sort of stuff is the timeline and the complexity of implementation as well. Because a lot of personalization platforms, they're really complex to implement. They're very time consuming to implement. You have to have your agency do the implementation because it is that complex. And obviously it's really impacting the theme engine and it's a coding exercise, right? And so I think the combination of trying to bring down the price, meaning the SaaS price of the technology, combined with your low/no code approach to implementation, means that technology that was once really only accessible by mid-enterprise and larger, say they would need to be doing anywhere from $20, $30, $40 million or more in GMV to really be able to justify that level of technology spend and implementation effort. And I love the fact that your goal was, how can I democratize this technology even down to the SMB?
So funny story. I remember a year or a year and a half after I founded the company, I've bumped into an article that says, like, one of the leading like research institutions, like a really good one, I'm not sure which one was it, like a McKinsey or something like that. They've said, why do we think that in the next 5 to 10 years, personalization for e-commerce is going to die? So that was the headline, something like
wow.
That. Something yeah. In the lines of this. And I started reading the article. And by the time I finished reading it, I was more optimistic about what I'm doing. Because what they actually said is that personalization, it's proving to work, right? So it should be part of the tech stack for every brand. This is something like you need your email marketing, you need to acquire customers through ad spend. You know that you need all sorts of things, like you need to invest in shipping. You know that there are a list of stuff that you need. Part of it is personalization. You can't have a static experience for all your customers. You need to understand who's your audience. You need to understand the different segments. You need to adjust the messaging and the offering to different segments. It's mandatory. But what they said there in the article is that implementing this is just not cost effective. So if this is the way to go, you find yourself like you need personalization, obviously, because it's going to increase sales for you and give you better KPIs. But you invest so much time and so much money into this. And at the end of the day, when you look, you know, what happened during the last year, it's just not cost effective. And that was examining those enterprise, very complicated solutions. And that kind of proved me that I'm going in the right direction with what's trying to do, which is trying to cut cost for them, trying to cut all those long processes, try to automate as many processes as possible. So they just don't need to handle this in terms of like putting their time and just something that at the end of the day be cost effective. And this is how we measure ourselves, by the way. We measure ourselves really ROI positive. And if we're not able to be very influential in terms of achieving our clients like 5 to 10 to 15x sometimes, on their investment, this is just not something that is interesting for us.
Wow. And this industry has gone through tremendous change over the last 5 to 10 years. We have had completely independent technologies. I know because I've had to implement this as a merchant before. We've had very independent technologies. We've had advanced and enterprise grade site search. We had enterprise grade merchandising. We had enterprise grade product recommendations. And then we had enterprise grade content personalization and recommendation. So we had these four buckets of what you could loosely call personalization, and they all had kind of their own engines. They had their own logic. They had their own machine learning slash AI, especially laterally. And what we're seeing is we're seeing consolidation across the board in the personalization market. And we're seeing rationalization of the technology. So now oftentimes you get search and merch and they're in one platform, and then you get product personalization in another platform. But what you guys have done, and what I really like, now I've never used your platform before, but at least from what I can tell from your collateral, is that you have combined two of the big puzzle pieces together in one platform. And that's not only product recommendation personalization, but it's also content personalization and customer segmentation. Oftentimes, those are separate technologies that don't share data with each other. They don't help improve both elements of that together in a uniform way, and they don't feed data to each other. And so I feel like that's a pretty unique value proposition for you guys.
So something that we keep telling our merchants, it's not just what you offer to your clients, it's also what do you say to them? So in that sense, it's not just product recommendation or offering complementary products to do to try and increase the cart size, but it's also controlling the messaging and creating those personalized promotions with banners and maybe attach videos to that. So for us, the content part is, it's attached to it. It's part of the package.
It's intertwined, right? It's intertwined with the experience.
It's intertwined. And we have developed something that we're very proud of. It's called a messaging panel inside the platform that basically can control everything. So even if you're doing product recommendation carousel, right? And it's based on the AI algorithm and it's running free and it's showing relevant personalized product to each user, we're saying, okay, you also have the option to control the messaging. So instead of just, you know, let's say that a user comes to your store and this is now, I don't know, a first-time user, first time on your store. Instead of just having this generic recommended for you, maybe say, have this message that say, welcome, blah, 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 something, which kind of resonates with them about the fact that they're first time on your store, and show them products that maybe are more towards bestsellers. And for instance, for customers that are your own customers, repeating customers, maybe say their name, maybe say, Jason, we'll come back and show them products that are they viewed or purchased before, or products that the algorithm recognizes relevant to them. Control the messaging itself in the headline, control the messaging of the product description inside a carousel. So instead of just having this technical description, most of the time you see a pack shot and under there's like a few words, mostly very technical about the product that describe it from a very taken from the product page or the headline. So you can also, using this messaging panel that we built, you can also control it and more make it even more salesy and make it more personalized even there. On top of that, something additional that we've added is a connection to ChatGPT. Now using OpenAI, you are able to generate banners through the platform that will be generated. You can generate text for them, and then each banner will be personalized. So everything is connected.
And that is so crucial, right? So if you, obviously, if you know the data about the individual that's visiting, especially once they're authenticated, then you truly know everything there is about them. But if the experience that the customer is having across the website is informing both the type of messaging that they would need to receive around that product, around that experience, around that category, around whatever it is that you're trying to present to them in a meaningful way that can help and assist in conversion, then oftentimes that means they need to be better informed as opposed to a traditional product panel, which would typically have product cards in it that would look very similar to the product card, say, on the category page. And as you rightly point out, the problem with typical product cards is that they can only present so much information, right? They can only show you so much, and it typically takes the form of an image, it takes the form of the price, it takes the form of maybe the number of review stars, it maybe will show you the variants of the product, some color swatches, but that's about it. There's no room really in that space of a product card to give the amount of information that most customers or potential customers are gonna want to have around that product to be able to fully inform their purchase decision and get them to actually add that product to the cart.
One of the things that we're trying to do is offer our merchants the ability to enrich their feed. And this is something that is done through the platform. As a merchant, you obviously have your product feed, which represents your inventory. Most of the feeds looks the same. So inside all of the products, the title, the description, the pack shot images, and maybe a few tags that describing the product. Something that we offer them is a way to enrich this feed. So adding, for instance, images they have on their social channels, if it's Instagram, if it's TikTok. So we've integrated with Instagram and TikTok, and they are able to import all this rich content that they have there and assign it to their products. So this is one thing that we offer them. Another thing that we offer them is their ability, as I said before, add more content to it, like messaging and stuff like that. So we are big believers in content intertwining with personalization. And that's part of the enrichment, the overall enrichment to the site that using potential customers find very important as part of the overall experience of online shopping.
Man, that seems like it would be super important, particularly to SMB merchants that don't yet have a PIM, because most of the merchants that have a PIM, they would have in many cases, additional supporting content, rich media content, et cetera, that your small and medium-sized merchants that effectively use their e-commerce platform as their PIM, they oftentimes don't have the level of enrichment and they don't have the extra product information and the engaging videos and the entertaining videos and other types of content that you really need to effectively sell products today with social validation, et cetera. You really, and even down to the UGC level, obviously, if a merchant wants to start bringing in UGC, well, from those two platforms that you support at the very least, then it means they're able to do that as well. So it feels to me like this is almost like an ultra lightweight PIM, specifically as it relates to the convergence of content and commerce around the cross-sells, upsells, recommended products, and the personalized product recommendations that you would typically see in a combination of the homepage, specific to category pages. Oftentimes, you may have product recs on product pages, and then also at the cart level as well. So I'm guessing that you support all of those different placements around the site in a low-code slash no-code way. But I love the fact that you make it easy for these smaller brands without a PIM to start injecting some of that rich in alongside and supporting the product recommendations themselves.
Yeah, and the fact that you really touched that point that is important for us. We try to cover all the touch points and we tell this to our customers. The fact that those assets are communicating with one another, all of them, all those assets are at the end of the day connected to the personalization engine. So you will be able to have all kinds of different, maybe product recommendation, maybe cross-selling and upselling in the cart and the checkout page, maybe a segmented banner on the catalog page with something that we call a storyteller underneath. And maybe you'll have product bundles inside a PDP. So all those experiences are connected with one another. And we have merchants that have 15 assets spread throughout the website and all kinds of different touch points. And you're able to see, and you'll be able to see all of them driving engagement and driving sales, which is something that we also reflect in the platform. Like we will give the brands the breakdown of each individual app and its performance, and we'll help them create more and more experiences that are connected to one another.
And are they allowed to A/B test one asset against another for the same product linkage? Because they might have 1, 2, 3 assets and they might not be able to deploy all of them in a specific placement, but are they able to test those against each other to see which one performs better in association with a given product?
So there is an option to do not officially through what we call an A/B test, which is something that we're going to launch very soon in the next couple of months. The way they can do it now is basically build segments inside the assets, and then each segments will behave differently through rules that they can place into it. So for instance, if you, I don't know, you created this product, this recommendation carousel, you can create two segments that are can be different or the same. And then for each one of them, we'll have different rule and different design. And then you can compare between the two. So we also have an overview tab, which they can see exactly which segment perform better, but we will launch it in a more dedicated A/B test UI in the next couple of months.
Wow, cool. It's good that I asked that question then, because that gives everyone the heads up that new functionality is coming to the platform. Very exciting. Now, how do you guys manage the fact that you're a no-code, low-code implementation? So talk to me a little bit more about that, because your tip, you know, enterprise class personalization platform, it can easily take 4 to 8 weeks worth of dev time and implementation and testing and setting all the fallback rules. And there's quite a lot of theme work, customization that is required in most instances to implement those hot, super high-end platforms. And so for you guys, how have you managed from a technical perspective to keep down the complexity of actual implementation and therefore allowing merchants to get live faster with your technology? Because speed to market really just comes down to how quickly can we get the ROI or time to value, right? That's a very common term in our industry. And oftentimes, a lot of these supplementary technologies for e-commerce, their time to value is super long. They're really complex to implement. It just takes a long time.
I think that, first of all, there's a difference between Shopify and the other platform in that sense. So since we have a native integration with Shopify and we use their API for mostly everything, this is completely no code, meaning that for a Shopify merchant, you'll be able to install the Dialogue app and everything will be done through the UX. If it's positioning the assets and drag and drop from like different locations, we also support Shopify 2.0. So you can use Blocks from your own Shopify admin panel. And we've also built something inside the Dialogue editor that lets you see your store in the middle and just move the assets around. That's regarding Shopify. For the other platforms, the no-code part comes after you finish the integration. The integration for, I don't know, Magento Store, then WooCommerce and the rest of them is not that complicated. You can, I don't know, fairly compare it to integrating your Google Analytics. So that means a JavaScript code snippet and then placing to it. And basically that's it. Maybe connecting your feed. Everything again can be done self-serve through the platform itself. It shouldn't be that much of a problem. You don't need, again, to be a developer or something. But once you've done that, from that point, the platform becomes no code, meaning that you can, again, create assets, design them through the UI. We built a very extended customization panel that lets you very quickly design your assets, and then you can place them using the magic positioning tool wherever you want on your store. So in that sense, the no-code approach, which is part of our belief for SMBs and mid-market companies, they don't want to pour extra money. They've already paying us for the technology. They don't want to pay an agency or the developer to start coding stuff. So that was very important for us to build a platform in such a way that it's completely no code. And once you've installed it, that's it. Everything is done through the UI.
Wow. Incredible. That definitely, I can see how that leads to democratization of this type of technology, because the barrier to entry for a lot of these technologies is that implementation time and the implementation cost by a developer, by an agency, by a specialist in the technology, exactly. Who then also, in order for them to implement that, they have to be trained up and enabled by the platform provider themselves before they can even start implementing the technology. And so definitely I can see the value in that. And you also talk a little bit about on your site about engagement optimization on the customer experience side. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think most people listening will understand the concept of cross-sells and upsells. They'll understand the concept of product recommendations and linking that with content. But when you talk about engagement optimization through the lens of your platform, what does that mean for you guys?
So what we've seen is there's direct correlation between engagement increase and conversion increase. So if you have 15% increase in engagement, you'll have 10 to 15% increase in sales. And from the moment you understand that, you're not just trying to... So you have products like, I don't know, upselling in the cart page that are very focused on selling more. So you added a shirt to the cart, you go to the cart page, you'll see, I don't know, personalized offer for matching scarf or shorts or whatever that goes with the shirt. With most chances, you'll edit and then we've been able to impact the cart value. So these are very targeted towards conversion. The other part, which is engagement, we've seen that, and that goes back to content. We've seen that using content, you can increase engagement significantly. I can give you one example. So one of our products, it's called Storyteller, basically tells short stories about products in your store with lifestyle images and videos and more. And again, we let them create however they want it through the platform. And this is an engagement tool, right? Once they have enough storytellers, it can be also personalized. So each user will see a different storyteller based on where they're coming from or what products they engage with. But those storytellers really increase engagement. So users can click and scroll through and read about products, read short stories about them. It lets the brand kind of communicate with their audience. It increases engagement immediately. And we've seen that it actually leads to sales. So this is another kind of a way for us to move the needles for our merchants.
Love it. I do really appreciate the fact that you guys break down the platform into these three buckets, right? This e-commerce personalization, which e-commerce managers, for example, or CDOs would understand what that is. then those tools within the platform that fall into the bucket of conversion rate optimization, cross-selling, upselling, and I guess it's also AOV optimization, for lack of a better term, as well. And then also the customer experience piece, which is the piece that I think really sets you guys apart. So I like that you break down the platform into kind of these three main buckets of functionality. That's really clear to me that even if somebody's got a startup and they've only been selling on Shopify for 6 months, but feels very much, and let's say they're not that experienced with e-commerce, it feels like the way in which you tailor your platform and the way that in which you position your platform and the way in which you explain your platform can be really simply understood by people that just don't have a lot of experience with this stuff yet and don't really understand how they can start weaving machine learning and AI into their customer journey outside of a platform like yours. And what I'm seeing in the market is that very few merchants in the world, probably only the top 1-3% max of merchants in the world, are going to be implementing their own AI solutions built on something like AWS's AI and consuming that as a service and then creating a customer journey based on that. They're going to consume the vast majority of their high-end machine learning and AI tech is going to be via platforms like yours that plug into their existing selling tools automatically. And like you've talked about using ChatGPT, they're never going to implement, for example, and they're never going to integrate ChatGPT directly into their platform by consuming the ChatGPT API. They're just not going to do that. The only way they're going to be able to tap into this new technology is via platforms like yours that make it easily accessible to all stage of a merchant's lifecycle.
Exactly. And you see it, by the way, also outside of e-commerce, like companies like Copy AI, basically, they're using API, connecting themselves to OpenAI or ChatGPT, and then make it more accessible. So we found ourselves, everyone can now for free log into ChatGPT and ask the chat to generate text or whatever. And we found ourselves, all of the team, using it. But then again, for specific stuff, we found that you need like more. You need a tool that's going to sit on top of ChatGPT and make something that is more tailored to our needs. So in that sense, this is what we're trying to do for merchants that we work with, for this ecosystem, that we try to take this technology that is out there, but is accessible for the big boys, and we try to make it accessible for SMBs.
And speaking of that accessibility, that's a great lead into how you do your pricing. And you've got that typical SaaS model where you've got these different tiers, and it costs you as you go up in functionality by tier, then obviously you go up in price, which makes sense. But again, you've democratized the pricing such that the starter package is $99 a month. And for the kind of value that you bring, you still get the AI recommendations, you still get the customer segmentation, product rules, statistics, and online support for $99 a month, up to 1,000 transactions per month. And the reality is that even the smallest merchants out there, if this is going to have the impact on conversion rates and also experiential piece that you guys have shown the data for across all of your customers. You have the data, you have access to the data, so you can see a pan merchant view of what's going on with your technology and how it's improving the bottom line of their businesses. You know, the reality is there'd be very few merchants out there that wouldn't be able to afford $99 a month going all the way up to premium and $7.99 a month. But once again, that's up to 7,500 transactions a month. And if you're doing that many transactions a month, then again, $7.99 a month is going to be totally affordable for you. Plus, you're going to have all of the additional functionality from the underlying tiers that sit beneath that. And so to me, it feels like you have democratized in two ways. You've democratized in the ease of implementation, but you've also democratized on price.
I think that's part of it. Obviously, when we're talking about being cost-effective for the merchant, so at the end of the day, dialogue needs to be ROI positive. So this is an investment. They invest $1, they need to get 3 or 4 back. This is how we view it. And as you've mentioned, we democratize it in a way that we try to make it accessible for everyone. Most of the time, we suggest them to go for the premium or the professional packages. But we do have a lot of merchants that are using the starter and the business packages for getting the next step of AI recommendations and cross-selling capabilities on their store.
Well, and obviously, if they start out at the lower end because they're a smaller business, then obviously you're going to help move the lever in their business. And then that contributes enough additional revenue and profitability to the business that now they can afford to be on the and justifies their further investment in the professional premium plan. It makes complete sense. What is coming from your perspective? Is there anything your customers would love to have from you today that you don't offer, or things in your platform that you'd love to add over the next, say, 12, 18 months? What's on the product roadmap for you guys?
So we're launching next week Klaviyo integration, which we're very excited about. So again, part of what we're trying to do is connect the dots for our merchants. We know that a lot of our merchants in the Shopify ecosystem use Klaviyo for email marketing, SMS, and so on and so forth. So what we're trying to do is connect what's happening from outside the store into the experience within. So if you're setting up campaigns, you're sending emails, you have workflows or campaigns on Klaviyo, you'll be able to import them very quickly as segments into Dialogue. And then let's say that for a specific segment of users that edit something to the cart and you want to send this automated campaign that drives them back to the website, you'll have a specific messaging ready on the homepage for them or in the product page that's going to drive them to make the purchase. You might have the recommendation ready for them with the add to cart button that will add the product directly so they don't need to go and look for it. That's something we're really excited about, and we're launching it next week. And for the coming year, content is really a big part of what we want to focus on. So we want to improve content capabilities, automated generation of content, connecting it with the other assets in the platform. So this is for sure something that we'll keep optimizing and improving. And the ChatGPT integration, what we've just started, is something that we want to build more and more capabilities on.
And how dependent are you on, if at all, on third-party cookies, which are obviously going to go the way of the dodo? And with some of the privacy changes in iOS, that's hampering some of the data coming into the likes of Klaviyo. So how dependent are you guys on third-party cookies, if at all, to make your technology work consistently across sessions?
So that's only part of it. The cookies, we have all kinds of different techniques, which is part of our secret sauce, and I can't really share them here, of ways to get more data, relevant data about customers to know more about them. But cookies is just part of it. We know that we are going towards a world without any cookies, and we've taken steps to gain data in other ways, which are going to be compliant to the new guidelines.
And how do you help ensure that a merchant doesn't over-personalize so that they retain some of the surprise and delight factor that you want to have as a merchant, you want to provide as a merchant throughout the discovery process? How do you ensure that people don't over hyper-personalize, and combined with the fact that sometimes when a shopper comes to a website, they're not shopping for themselves, they might be shopping for somebody else. And so therefore, everything you know about that immediate shopper may not apply because they might not be shopping for themselves, maybe shopping for somebody else. So how do you guys help merchants achieve that balance between over-personalization and some of the other experience discovery factors?
I'm not sure if I would call it over-personalization, because I don't think that there's enough data out there to know that much information about a user to over-personalize their experience. But we do give our merchants the option to set up their own rules and customize the recommendations if they like to. So they do have the option to either build their carousels from scratch or use the automated ones and place layers on top of them. As I said before, for instance, if they want to take like this product carousel and they want to create a segment, a really specific segment for, I don't know, heavy spenders. So users that usually spend more than the average AOV on the store. So they can create the segment and place a specific rule. And then they know which segment will see what product specifically, and they can also adjust the messaging to it. But I think that as an overall idea, what we're trying to do is there's never 100%. You'll never understand each individual user's intent. There's no way doing it in online. We know that. We invest our lives into it, and we know that. But what we're trying to do to brands we work with is give them an additional 30% or 40%. And that will be enough to create this dynamic personalized experience on their store. So it's not every individual user will know exactly what their intent at any given moment, but we will be far better than what they have right now.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Thank you so much, Omri, for sharing all of this passion and your love for what you do and your experience and your technology with us today. We're coming to the end of our time together, but I'd love to take this opportunity to turn the microphone over to you. We're now at that point where I get to let you ask me one question, any question you like. Can be personal, can be professional. So I'd love to turn the microphone over to you. Omri Katz from Dialogue, what question do you have for me today?
So Jason, as someone who has been interviewing a lot of tech companies from our ecosystem, what do you think, like, what are the next trends that you see in the market? What do you feel like merchants are passionate about? What kind of big problems that the next year or two this ecosystem going to be addressing too, that you find very interesting?
Look, that's a fantastic question. And because I focus so heavily on B2B merchants, D2C merchants as well, but oftentimes D2C merchants that are trying to establish a B2B channel, or the other way around, the B2B merchants that are trying to establish a new D2C channel, dip their toes in that water. I think that the B2B e-commerce ecosystem is, from what I'm seeing, is 5 to 10 years behind the D2C / B2C technology e-commerce ecosystem. That's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing that the technology is really immature on the B2B side of e-commerce. And I am really looking forward to the entire cottage industry of e-commerce growing up around specifically the needs of B2B merchants. And I'm just not seeing it yet. Sure, you can adapt a lot of B2C, D2C technology. You can adapt it for B2B experiences, but there is the user experience for B2B customers is sufficiently different and their needs are sufficiently different. And even the data sets that operate in the way that the data models operate in the B2B world are sufficiently different. And I'll just give you one example. So price in the prices of products in the catalog in the B2C, D2C world are an attribute of the product. And I've said this before, but in the B2B world, pricing is an attribute of the customer. It's not an attribute of the product. And so when we think of it through that lens and all of the downstream impacts of just that one data model difference alone, the needs of B2B merchants and customers are very different in many respects. And I just don't see a really great tech ecosystem out there yet that specifically focuses on the needs of B2B merchants. And so I think that's going to change. COVID changed B2B e-commerce forever, because historically, most B2B merchants, if they offer quote-unquote e-commerce at all, it's EDI integration directly with their biggest customers, directly integrated with ERP, for example, and POs get synced down electronically. And now we have B2B merchants that are selling to SMB customers of their own, or even up to mid-enterprise customers of their own. And so B2B e-commerce, self-service e-commerce functionality is becoming an absolute need. And that was borne out during COVID when field sales reps couldn't go and see their customers. And so that need is really, really quickly. And the ecosystem around B2B is just really super, super immature still. And there's just not enough out there specifically targeted at B2B merchants yet.
Super interesting. Love to keep this conversation afterwards with you.
Absolutely. I look forward to it myself. Well, look, mate, again, thank you so much for your time. Again, just putting it out there. If people want to find out more about Dialogue, go to nowdialogue.com, go and check it out. And Omri, would you like people to connect with you on LinkedIn, or would you just prefer, if people want to find out more, just go to the website?
Whatever. Go to the website on LinkedIn. We're happy to connect with everyone.
Absolutely love it. Thank you so much for your time. And I look forward to catching up with you again in the future, mate. Are you a B2B or D2C e-commerce merchant? Then head over to greenwoodconsulting.net to learn how we can help you scale your business.